So tonight's talk is about the smart heart, which is one way that Buddhism has been described. If you know my friend Noah, he's got the words compassion and wisdom tattooed. I've got different Buddhist words tattooed. But compassion and wisdom, balancing the two, or balancing the heart with the head, is very much at the core of this practice, and tonight's talk, I think, would be very especially useful for anybody who does any kind of service or sponsorship in 12-step or in any way is trying to help someone else and is trying to balance the effort. The Buddha said that there's four divine states of mind or attitudes that we should cultivate when we're working with other people. And they go as follows. The first is metta, which means goodwill. And it's summarized when we say the phrase, may I be truly happy, may all beings be truly happy, be truly peaceful. The second divine attitude to have when dealing with ourselves and other people is karuna, compassion, and that's summarized by the phrase, may all beings be free from stress and suffering. May I be free from stress and suffering. The third divine attitude to cultivate is appreciation, which is the exact opposite of envy. It's feeling good about someone else's happiness, even when we are struggling ourselves or having a tough time. It's not feeling like we're competing with other people for true happiness. And it's summarized by the word is mudita in Pali, and it's summarized by the phrase, may all beings maintain and not lose whatever true happiness they've cultivated. Words to that effect. Now the fourth divine attitude is actually the one that people have the most difficulty grasping, and is probably the one that keeps us sane when we're keeps us balanced, keeps us from losing our wits, going to our wits' end when dealing with other people. It's upekkha, which means equanimity, and the phrase that the Buddha taught it with, a chant that the Buddha used to reflect on equanimity, is all beings are owners and heirs to their actions. I'm going to explain what that means. The first three, as you notice, are wishes or goals. They start out with the words, may all beings be peaceful, may all beings be free from stress and suffering, may all beings maintain their happiness. So they're goals, they're states that have not necessarily yet been attained. But the fourth, equanimity, is a statement about the way things really are. The Buddha says, all beings are the results of their previous actions. What we are experiencing right now is largely the result of the actions and thoughts that we have been responsible for the past. Now, there's a couple of other factors in there. Of course, other people occasionally play a role. Other events occasionally play the role in our happiness and our stress. And, of course, there's the present time, what our present attitudes are. But a large portion of what we are experiencing right now is the previous thoughts and the previous actions we've had. I'll give you an example, because this can be difficult to grasp. The Buddha is, first of all, not saying that we have a solid, unchanging identity. He's saying that we have a lot of constantly changing thoughts and feelings and perceptions, that the ideas we have are changing over time, but they are limited by what we have used our minds for in the past. For example, when I was in school, a lot of people talked about how once they joined the workforce, they were going to change the system from within. I love that saying. Yeah, man, I'm gonna become a lawyer, but I'm going to become a lawyer to change the system from within. Or I'm going to go in the stock market, but just enough to make enough money, and then I'm going to use the money to start like a really good fun. And then you, and they're like, you know, also fuck the man, fuck, you know, all those, you know, those stodgy people who just, you know, get stuck in a career, man. And can you pass the pot, you know? And then you meet them decades later, and they've got kids, mortgages, you know, they got car payments. And you're like, what happened to changing the world? And they're like, they look at you like you've lost your mind. You're just saying this to have fun anyway, because you knew they never were going to anyway. But and then the attitude is, well, I'm just trying to survive long enough to make the educational payments for my kids, pay off the mortgage, get a 401k that's halfway decent so that I don't have to worry about my retirement. That's what I'm worried about. So the actions that we take, the way we use our minds, completely change the thoughts, the stress, what we're experiencing. It's not so easy to say, I'm going to keep this mind separate from all the shit that I'm going to put myself through on a daily basis, working as a hedge fund person or a, you know, working as a lawyer or working as a this or that or doing this or that. This idea that somehow we can keep our minds completely separate from what we're, our actions are, from what we're thinking all those years to get through, it's a bit of a fallacy. Generally, the way we use our minds, the way, the things we focus the mind on, if we focus the mind on stressful things, on trying to control things we have no real control over, over the course of years, we're going to have a very pessimistic, a set of way of looking at the world that's very, feels very, like there's very little that we can do that's positive. So the actions and the way we use our mind creates limits on how much freedom we have right now. It doesn't, though, chain us entirely. The Buddha was very careful to say that even though the past limits us, if it totally defined us, then it would be pointless to try to help anyone else. If they had a solid set identity that was completely, utterly nailed into misery no matter what, it would be pointless to try to help someone. On the other hand, you look around you and you experience life in the world and you see that people are just not free to change in 180 degree angles whenever they want. There's a certain amount of limitation. Often the limitation is how much they can change in any given moment. We can only change a little bit, or sometimes there's a limitation on who can change us. We might be prepared to hear the message from one person, but we're not prepared to hear it from another person. To give you an example, over the years I've been teaching here, the 6 years, there's been thousands of people who've walked through that door and settled down into a seat. And a lot of people stay at Dharma Punks and a lot of people don't. And if I took it personally each time, you know, or thought, oh my God, what did I say wrong? You know, well, first of all, I'm glad that not everybody stays because the room would be ridiculously packed. But there's only, people are only open to messages that their past allows them to. And I can only reach people that my past actions allow me to reach. There are times when I'm funnier. There are times when I'm not as funny. There are times when I'm, my past allows me to have so much insight in such a different, in one area or another area, so I can only reach you with so much wisdom. And there's sometimes when, given your past, you're only open to a certain amount of a message in any given area. I'll give you a specific example. My dad was a violent drunk for a number of years, and then when he got sober around the time that I started using alcohol and drugs catastrophically for me, and he tried to carry the message to me but was incapable of being received by me because I was basically, I don't want to hear it from you. I don't want to hear it from a man that beat up my mom and, you know, used to basically not only physically abuse us, but, you know, beat us up, but verbally belittle us for years. I didn't want to hear, even though his message was perfectly legitimate, the karma between us, the past actions that I'd experienced, made it impossible for him to help me. So luckily, my dad was skillful enough that he went and he found other people that he had no background with who he could help in AA, and he helped a lot of other people over the years get sober. So the point of this is that whereas I was not capable of hearing his message, other people were. And that's very much lies at the center of the intelligent heart of what equanimity is all about. The Buddha, over and over again, as does the monk Ajahn Jeff that I studied with and Ajahn Lee, talks about the point of equanimity is to not waste our efforts on beings that we cannot reach or help. It is not about saying, I give up on everyone, fuck you all, I tried, I was in the 60s, the 70s, I marched once on Washington, didn't work, there's still a lot of bastards out there, that's it, I throw up my hands, that's it. Not equanimity. What equanimity is, oh, I'd like to be helped to this person, but they're not hearing me. And believe me, if you waste your time trying to figure out why somebody is not hearing your message, that's not a good way to use your mind. What you do is you see, oh, I'm trying to help A, it's not working out, I'm going to bring the message then to B or C or D until I find somebody who's a good message. This is about, as Ajahn Jeff says, true equanimity is about governing and marshaling our good efforts so that we can achieve the most success. There's a lot of times in life where you want to be successful with somebody that you love. You want to be able to carry a compassionate, helpful message to a mother, a father, a sister, a lover, a brother, a coworker, and they are not ready to hear it from you because of something you've had in your past with them or just something that they've experienced with somebody similar to you. You'll never find out why. What you've got to do is continue to use that positive energy to find someone you can help. After all, the Buddha says, the thing that's going to make us feel the best in the long term is how much help, compassion, goodwill, how much appreciation we've expended and generosity. So you don't want to waste it on a situation that's frustrating, that's just going to want to make you give up. On the other hand, you don't want to just simply give up altogether. You want to find the people that are open and available to what you can offer. So very clearly, the first thing is this is about using our compassion, our goodwill, and our appreciation wisely. Again, there's going to be people, no matter how friendly you are to them, they're not going to be friendly back to you. There's going to be people that, no matter how compassionate you are, they're not going to have any of their suffering ended by you. And there's going to be people that you try to appreciate their happiness and you see that they're gaining it in unskillful ways, or that they're just using it, their happiness, unskillfully. That they're not sharing it, that they're acquiring it unskillfully, whatever. So, be wise with your heart. Use your heart where it can be of help. Now, there's a couple of other notes about how important this is, and how important it is to reflect on the notion of karma. The first is that when we put aside someone that we can't help and move on to someone else, it's very important not to get entirely bent out of shape, entirely wrecked by the fact that we don't get to help the people that we choose. We get to help the people who need it from us and who are willing to receive it from us. What I mean is that suppose there was somebody who was the world's greatest heart surgeon who could heal some of the most inoperable heart conditions. You would want that surgeon not to waste his energy trying to operate on the first people who came to him if they were inoperable, if their hearts couldn't be helped. You'd want that surgeon to help the people who could literally benefit from his experience. On the other hand, you'd also want that surgeon not to be distraught over every time he says to somebody, "I'm sorry, I can't help you." You'd want him to be empathetic, but you wouldn't want him to be so shaken, so deterred, so ruined by the fact that he couldn't help one patient that he just said, "Ah, that's it. I'm through with this week. The other people who need me, I'm just going to give up on because I can't help this one person." You'd want him to be empathetic, to be sincere, but you'd also want him to be able to move on to somebody that he could help without sitting around trying to endlessly dissect why couldn't I help this one person. So part of equanimity is seeing who we can help. Another part of it is also letting go of our preferences. As I said earlier, we all want to be able to help the people that we really like. I once had, years and years ago, more than a decade ago, in a 12-step program, I had a sponsee amongst many that I could not stand for the life of me. And I had, already then, I had caller ID, and the name would come up, and the hairs in the back of my head, I'd have the visceral physical response of go away. So no matter how lonely I was, I'd instantly go into, why me? Why is the phone always ringing when it would be that person on the other end? And I'd always be, well, why couldn't it be one of the sponsees that I really like? Why does it have to be this one incessant talker who never ever listened to any suggestion I ever gave in all our years together? It was just, he was in the pit, he wanted to drag me into the pit with him and cover us up with dirt. The years I spent with him, like, fortunately, over time, I don't know what happened, but somehow we parted ways. And I realized then that while I was working with him, though, that I had to learn that if he was the one who was calling, he was the one who needed my help. No matter how much I didn't like particularly giving it to him, it was still, he was the one who needed the help. I didn't get to choose all the others that weren't calling me. I had to give my experience and my spiritual aid to that person. So we don't get to choose. It's not about who needs our help. It's about who wants it and about who's reaching out. So that's another thing about the intelligent heart. It's about giving it to the person and about not being overwhelmed and distraught when we can't be of use to the people that we want. Equanimity protects us. No matter how much you try to be compassionate, no matter how much you try to be generous, no matter how much you try to appreciate others and have goodwill and be friendly, it's only going to go so far. Even when somebody does receive your help, they still will often wind up in a very difficult bind. And if you don't have equanimity, you'll very often wind up constantly being thrown by the fact that even with our help, even when somebody wants it, even when there is some progress, we can't lift someone entirely often out of the water when we're in the boat. The only thing we can do is try to be as much help as we can. But equanimity reminds us that we have to also never extend ourselves to the degree, and this is essential, that we start causing ourselves stress and suffering as a result of trying to help them. Now that sounds like, when people hear that, they're like, but isn't Buddhism the Bodhisattva path? Well, the Buddha never taught, actually, suffer help other people suffer, cause more stress for yourself, and then once you help everybody else, then make yourself happy. That is the exact opposite of what the Buddha taught. The Buddha said it was never skillful to create stress or suffering for another being, including yourself, while you're trying to help someone else. So you extend yourself externally and at the behest of someone only as much as you don't bend your entire life out of shape. And this is so important. To give you an example, there's an entire 12-step program many of you have heard of called Al-Anon, which is for people who have alcoholics in their lives. And much of the entire spiritual path is about teaching people in that program what's known as detaching with love. And what that means is very often there's somebody in our lives that we try to help, but we want to help, and our help only goes so far, and then at a certain point we have to pull away, pull back, but we don't do it with anger. We don't do it with, well, fuck you, I try to help you, you're no good, low bottom, drunk. Well, no, we don't pull back with the sense of, well, if I can't help you, nobody can. We don't pull away with any of that, any resentment, any recrimination. We simply pull back with a sense of wishing them well, wishing them to find true happiness. But often when we pull away to maintain our own balance, our own inner peace, we have to do it by not allowing somebody in our lives as much as they want. A lot of times, people who are in suffering and stress are going to want to try to pull us into the water while we're in the boat. They're going to want to pull us into that pit that they've dug. And the only thing that you can do is help them enough, but not to the extent that you wind up being pulled out of your tranquility, out of your sense of peace, out of your sense of what's manageable. You can only give so much. Again, you only have so much compassion, only so much generosity. You only have so much wisdom, so much friendliness. The Buddha only had so much. The Buddha didn't help everybody who came to him. There's a lot. You read the Pali Canon, there's story after story after story of people who came to the Buddha and would ask him a very unskillful question or something that indicated to the Buddha, I'm not going to be able to help you. And the Buddha said, whoa, you know, wait until you come with a more open mind or a mind that I can reach, because right now I can't help you. He very often was challenged by members of the Jains, which was a competing spiritual group, and some of these people would at first be very challenging, very, very, you know, how can you possibly teach that there's a balance in life where you can actually enjoy food and enjoy clothing, but, you know, at the same time balance it with being helpful and skillful. And the Buddha would give them a small talk, and then they'd immediately want to join the Buddha. And the Buddha would say, no, you're so ingrained in your years and years and years of being a Jain that I really suggest that you keep your practice, but try to reflect on some of the things you've heard and come back later on. So again, the Buddha was never saying to somebody, you can never, ever learn from me, but he'd say to people, right now, I'm not capable of doing any more than I have for you, giving you this short talk, giving you this generosity. There's one time where the Buddha literally dressed a monk's wounds that was very sick, because the other monks didn't want to help him, but then the Buddha turned them over to the other monks and said, that's all the help I can give you. I've nursed you back from sickness. Now you're back amongst your fellows. That's how much I can give you. So these are all examples in how to preserve, how to use wisely our equanimity, our peace of mind, I mean, to use our wisdom and our generosity and our friendliness and our compassion to help others without burning ourselves out. Because I've spent a lot of time in my life around a lot of people who've tried to give as much as they possibly can. And I've noticed that these people have, who do survive, have equanimity in place. And I've noticed that the ones who burn out are the ones who completely try to save everyone at all costs, or try to force certain persons, certain people to be rescued that are not ready to be rescued by them. So being of help in the world is being smart about it. And that's tonight's talk on equanimity, what upekkha means, and I hope you got something from it. And now's your time to share about anything that's brought up, and especially those of you who've been or who've experienced using any of these principles, I'd welcome hearing your experiences. So thanks for listening. Hi.
Hi. I'm Maggie.
What's your name?
Maggie.
Maggie. Hi, Maggie.